Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. May 14th, 2017, Mother's Day 2017. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there that might be listening. Welcome, as always, Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, we got some politics going on. It was funny last week. You know, we thought early in the week we'd talk about Andrew Jackson and the statements about the Civil War that Donald Trump made, and then the health care vote. We were shocked by that. And I guess we thought we were going to talk a lot about health care in the coming weeks, and certainly we hopefully should, since that is an actual issue that affects people day-to-day on their lives. But Donald Trump, he shocked everybody again. He fired James Comey. I guess it was midweek, fired him while James Comey was literally across the country in Los Angeles. I saw something early in or midweek that the people on House of Cards that do the script writing for that. I've never watched that show much, but I know that there's a lot of plot twists and turns, and it's about Washington politics. They said, you know, as many shocking twist we try to write into the show, we can't keep up with reality over the last 4 months in the Trump administration. Catherine, does it seem like that?
Oh, yeah, it seemed like that. And the way Comey found out was really just, you know, the icing on the cake. You know, he was addressing an FBI squad in Los Angeles, I think. And he saw it on TV.
Yeah.
And he thought it was a joke, and he made a joke about it, and then he, like, went off, and then took him to, I don't know where. I saw him being followed on, or, like, what do you call that? On the highway, they were, you know, directing him to.
Yeah, I think it was mocked to being akin to the O.J. chase back in 1994.
Yeah,
and you're talking about they took him somewhere. Obviously, when you're relieved of duty in law enforcement, they take your badge, they take your gun. Now, the FBI, I'm not really sure what he's assigned, but I know FBI agents have badges. One would think that the guy that was in charge of the whole deal has a badge, and if he wanted a gun, he would get one. And did they have to take away the badge and the gun? Do you know, Catherine?
I don't know. I didn't hear about that, but I'm sure there had to be some kind of fur of, you know, identification and, you know, access, and, you know, they had to cut off access to him to all the various databases and computers and, you know, actual offices and all that stuff. But I just thought it was crappy to just, like, to not even tell him. I mean, it's just, you know, more signs of bad management.
Oh, yeah. And, Tim, I think he had to go back to the plane, the FBI plane, and there's apparently some question or not whether he would get to ride the plane home or he'd have to get a ticket to fly back to Washington where he resides, or Northern Virginia or wherever in the D.C. area.
Apparently, the way it went down is that Trump sent a handwritten note with the former, the head of his security detail.
Yeah.
His private security detail, who he's appointed to some position up there, to the FBI office in Washington. They phoned to Los Angeles to the staff. The staff come out there in the middle of the meeting he was having and informed him what had happened, and he was called back to Washington, which meant he was supposed to go get on the plane, go back. For one thing, they had to have the plane back. And then second thing, at least the FBI tried to follow some sort of protocol, even if our beloved president did not. I was trying to come up with something positive about this particular thing, and I just couldn't do it or how it was handled either. But a couple observations. It doesn't really matter about the reason that he did this. How it looks to everyone is what is creating this firestorm sense. And number two, and I mentioned this in passing before we went on the other, this president makes snap decisions, major decisions like this, with no input on many occasions. And he has no trusted advisor, as other presidents have had, that can step in and say, you know, Mr. President, that's not a good idea to do it this way. And he just goes off on his own. His staff didn't know it was coming. And just when you think this guy can't top what he's done, he does. And this one, oh, boy, they said the Russia thing ain't going away. I don't see how this thing goes away. Do you, David?
No, and we've talked about the what. Now I think it is time to get in the why. And by the way, we'll continue to discuss this with our guest for tonight. Robin Biro's coming back. I kind of got Sunday Mother's Day and starting the show. I neglected to set up our show properly. But let's get into the why. And that's very important. There's the why they told everybody. They didn't like how he handled things back last July with Hillary Clinton's emails. It was almost like they wanted us to believe that they were defending Hillary Clinton and the way she was treated. Of course, that was how most of America met that, is with laughter. I don't know that anybody buys that. Even his supporters have to wonder about that reason. And then people, of course, feel James Comey likes to investigate things. He likes to get to the bottom of things because he's, you know, a policeman. I remember a show from before my time called Dragnet, and there was a real serious detective, and that's how I kind of sense James Comey is. Always agree with it. We know that he's going to be real thorough and serious about whatever. So he was going to investigate this Russia thing to fullest that he deemed, you know, criminally or investigatively necessary. And Donald Trump didn't like that, so he got rid of him. And he admitted as much to Lester Holt. Wasn't that in some ways just as shocking as the actual firing, that he was brazen enough to admit it? What do you think, Catherine?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty shocking when he admitted it. But also, I mean, I have to think, I think that he, our president, doesn't like it when other people get more attention than he does. And I think Comey's getting a lot of attention, and I think that that's part of what plays into his frustration. What's all that noise?
Not on my end.
Okay.
Me either.
Yeah, keep going. Yeah, I have no idea. Catherine, go ahead.
But I think he just doesn't like anyone else getting more attention than he does. I think that's why if we do lose Spicer, that'll be why, because he's getting all this, you know, attention on Saturday Night Live, and he's just getting a lot of attention. I think that is one of the things that really bothers President Trump, and I think that plays into his decision about Comey. I'm not saying that's the only reason, but I think there's part of that in there.
I think it's for the Russia thing, because, I mean, James Comey was not getting attention while Trump was. And, of course, you have to remember, 9/10 of that's negative attention. I guess he thought that the noose was closing in. Now, of course, this has been compared a lot to Richard Nixon. We found out that apparently Donald Trump's quite an admirer of Richard Nixon. I'm not sure he fully understands Richard Nixon best remembered for. What do you think, Tim?
What do you think, Tim? I you know, there have been many, many times in preceding months that I've been asked that particular question, and many, many times I have not been able to come up with a really good answer to that question when it concerns this fellow. I mean, to brazenly fire the man at the FBI who is in charge of an investigation involving you, and then to say, well, yeah, that's what, baby. So what? This guy, you know, he knows how to do one thing, and that's act like a businessman, which he's been all his life. How do you handle a problem in business, guys? Well, you fire him, and then it goes away. Only that's not the way government works. You don't fire the director of the FBI that is investigating you for some really serious stuff, and it goes away. You certainly don't do it without telling your staff, and they all come out and just do the best they can, and all of them tell about a half a dozen different stories, and then he comes out and undercuts it by saying something totally different. You just don't do things like that. And you get back to wondering at what point people are going to get enough.
Yeah, you make a great point about being a business. And, of course, Tegan Goddard has a book that he wrote talking about when you win elections, start governing. And one of the chapters is it's not a business. But even if he ran it like a business, if he ran it like a publicly traded company where you have to answer to shareholders, then that might be a little better, because I don't think Donald Trump understands this, that when you win the presidency, you don't own the government. You are the representative of the people, all 300 million of us, which he's a part of, but so are you and me and Catherine. We're all a part of the government, and you run it on their behalf. And I don't think he understands that concept in any way, shape, or form. And that's why this whole CEO business mindset that he has is so flawed. Catherine, do you kind of get the sense that the business thing's worn thin with a lot of folks now, even some supporters?
Oh, yeah. I don't know about his supporters. I can't understand that.
Well,
but
his supporters,
there's
levels of them. Yeah.
I mean, I do think that the people who have touted this idea that the government should be run like a business, and that's what we need is a strong business leader in charge of the government, I think they're probably having second thoughts about that idea now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never believed that. I've always believed that there were very, very different skills in running a business and being a elected official. I've always thought it was very, very different, and always challenged that idea that we need to run it like a business. But I do think people who thought that and who are, you know, wise enough to reconsider their idea are probably reconsidering that right now.
Yeah, and I think another thing, it depends on who you are. Who are the two most famous American businessmen of the past, say, two decades? Well, if you wanted to say the glitz and the glamour of The Apprentice and the Gold LeMay and all that, Donald Trump's one of them. I would think the quiet, substantive style of Warren Buffett would be the other. And you have a feeling that even though Warren Buffett's a businessman and known for running businesses, that he would still run government very different, because who he is substance over style. And Donald Trump is all style over substance. And that gets down to the core of who they are. But looking at this, Tim, what do you think the fallout's going to be? I mean, are any Republicans going to begin to sour and actually have some guts enough to stand up to him and want to investigate anything? To me, that's the biggest question. Will Republicans have any guts?
I don't believe they will do so yet, because Donald Trump is not yet hurting any of them electorally. If they perceive that they could lose begin losing elections with challenges from the left instead of the right, you're darn right they'll turn on him. When their jobs are at stake, there's the answer to your question. When they perceive that their jobs are at stake, that's when they'll start really turning on him, and a trickle will turn into a flood. But right now, no, they're not going to turn on him. Not right now.
Yeah, Catherine, same question. You think the Republicans will have the guts?
I don't think they're going to have guts or integrity. I think they're going to have fear at some point. I mean, I don't know if you've seen any of these videotapes. There's been a few videos released of Republicans at town halls, and people are going after them about the health care. I mean, there's a couple of them that are just really riveting and long. And, you know, there's one with like a guy who's like in the healthcare industry, and he just goes off on, I can't remember who it was.
He's from New Jersey, correct? And he wore his scrubs, and his wife had had some health issues.
Yeah. Did you see that? It was really compelling. But, I mean, I think that combined with this Comey thing and then whatever the next thing is, I think that they're going to start feeling the pressure from their constituents, and they're going to have to decide whether they're going to push back or, you know, they're going to have to make some decisions about how they're going to respond to these reactions.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be that they have to have fear of losing. Although you would think that, you know, a John McCain, a Lindsey Graham, they just had their elections recently. They always talk about good government and being a maverick and standing up. You'd think they would be some of the first ones, too. I noticed this week in talking about tweets, Sam Wang, professor at Princeton, he noticed that when the phrase, I'm deeply troubled about, and it'll be something about Donald Trump, it usually then leads to nothing. Did y'all see that tweet, and have y'all heard that phrase, deeply troubled?
Yes.
and get going, Tim, you did.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
yes.
Like they want to do something, but there's something holding them back. It's definitely some form of party over people, to reverse Matthew Dowd's group, people over party. Go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, I saw Mitch McConnell the other day on the floor of the Senate, and he said that there's not going to be a special prosecutor. I personally think that Mitch McConnell is politically smarter and tougher than every Democrat and practically every Republican in the U.S. Senate. Now, people can disagree with that. I can't stomach the man, but I got to give the devil his due here. And if he says there's not going to be a special prosecutor, you know what? There's not going to be one until Mitch McConnell says there's going to be one, and that's just going to be that. That sounds cold, but I believe that's the way it is.
Well, the thing is even if they do get a special prosecutor, it's still the FBI that's doing the investigation. So they still have to, you know, all the special prosecutor does is prosecute. They don't do that. They're not investigators. So they're still relying on the FBI to do the investigation, so it doesn't really. I mean,
well,
it's a little bit of a misnomer to suggest that a special prosecutor is going to have much different. That it's going to be that much different, right?
Yeah, they can't answer stuff. Now, one thing to remember before we move soon is I think Donald Trump. Somebody did something shrewd, although shady. And they appointed Mitch McConnell's wife to serve in the cabinet, and that may kind of help keep Mitch McConnell in check and on the team, if you will. But right now, we don't even necessarily have to move off this topic, but let's bring in our guest, coming back to the show for a second appearance, Robin Vero. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me back on, guys.
And your willingness to come on. Thanks for that. Well,
you know,
obviously, it's such a big topic, it warrants over 20 minutes. James Comey got fired. in such a crazy way. Just kind of tell us, Robin, what your thoughts are of the firing, the reasons why, and then what some of the fallout may be.
You know, absolutely. As we all know by now, Comey was out in L.A. Giving his speech to the FBI, and he actually found out only because a television was on in the vicinity, and he found out that way, which, I mean, it's just insane to think about that is exactly how he found out that he no longer had a position there at the FBI. So I did some digging, and I have some connections. So there are four reasons that led to this, from the best that I can ascertain. First, of course, is his refusal to end the investigation into the collusion with Russia. Secondly, was as we found out now, Comey refused to pledge his loyalty to Donald Trump when they had that private dinner. He promised only to uphold the law. But what's not being discussed so much in the media is that he also refused to preview his Senate testimony. And that really upset Donald Trump. It is not atypical for someone to give a preview of what they were going to say, but Comey flat out refused to give him the preview of the Senate testimony. And got to go back a few weeks ago, Donald Trump still was real bitter that Comey would not find some way to justify his completely ludicrous claims about President Obama's wiretapping of him at Trump Tower. So those are my top four reasons that led to the firing. I think that the optics are just terrible for this White House. I think that it was completely ill-advised. The thing that blows my mind the most is Jeff Sessions, because he had recused himself from this and then turns right back around and, you know, steps on himself and into the mud by meddling in this. And now they've admitted that it's because of the Russia investigation. So he's got a serious legal problem. And I've read some legal analysis that he could very well face losing his license to practice law because he has now intervened after he had recused himself. So, you know, there's a lot going on. It's been a moving target for the last week for me to try and keep up with, especially since I'm called to be a pundit on the news. But I'm trying my best to keep going with it. One thing that I found that I love are, you have to follow all of the little rogue accounts on Twitter for all the different branches of this administration, because they shoot out some really interesting information. So the one that I loved this week was the rogue White House senior advisor Twitter said that the POTUS is freaking out about leaks and mutiny, and that he's cycling out all of their staff. They were cycling out all of the Air Force One crew. They're calling in everybody to have loyalty meetings. And they've asked everybody on his staff to list five things that they like about this president, and at the end, make America great again five times.
Oh my God!
That's so crazy to me. I know. I mean, it's like, if that doesn't signal some sort of a you know, death spiral slash, I just don't even know. It's ridiculous. So,
well, Robin, I need to pass this around to some follow-up questions to Catherine, then Tim, but I got to ask one. What flavor is the Kool-Aid they serve at these meetings?
I know.
Catherine, try to bring some more seriousness to this. More Comey questions.
Nice to have you on, Robin. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely.
So you've been on, I don't watch much news, but I know I fought war fronts on Facebook, so I know that you've been on the news. What is the right saying about this? Like, are they, like, how are they trying to explain it?
Yeah, you know, of course, as you know, I'm one of the lone Democratic voices on Fox News Channel and Fox Business News, so I do get quite a personal first-hand take of what the right is saying about this, because they come for me, believe me. They send me all sorts of hate mail and death threats. So, you know, they basically think that we're all cooking this up, that there's nothing to see here. Now, what they love to say is that Clapper himself, Obama's former head of the National Intelligence, said that there was nothing here. But Clapper and Donald Trump himself, I want to point this out. There was one day this week where Donald Trump was kind of missed, but Donald Trump had his Twitter background as a thing that said that Clapper had said that there was nothing here to this investigation. That was actually the background for his Twitter, but they promptly removed it because Clapper went on MSNBC and clarified what he said on May 8th and said that to the Senate Judiciary Committee and said that what he was referring to was that there was no evidence of intervening in the voter tallies of the 50 states. That as far as the intervention of the election itself, they're not qualified. They don't have the resources. That BI. So what they've all been saying to me is pointing to what Clapper had said on May 8th, that there was nothing there. But you know, now Clapper has come back and clarified that. So they don't really have an argument at this point. And it's just kind of a lot of static. Regarding this, they love to just basically say, you know, that we're all libtards and don't know what we're making a mountain out of a molehill here. But you know, it's all pointing to collusion. So.
Oh yeah, it's all pointing to collusion, and I love that they're like, well, he could fire anybody he wants. No, he really can't. Like.
Yeah. Right.
It's a very business. Oriented attitude that you can you're the president, you can do whatever you want. Well, no, you're the president, and there's rules. There's laws.
I want to point out too that the interim director, McCabe, has now they have stopped giving the White House any updates about the investigation because they don't trust this White House. So you know, there you go, right there.
Crazy. Okay, I'm gonna pass it on to Tim. Thanks, Robin.
You bet.
First of all, Mr. Bureau, in recent days, as you know, the words Nixonian and Watergate have been thrown about pretty freely in public
yes.
media. Is this comparison presently a fair one?
No, it's not, because at that time, Congress seemed to care about when the laws were broken. And the Nixon, I want to point this out, too, that the Nixon Presidential Library actually sent out a tweet the other day that said, I'll have you know that we never fired the director of the FBI. So I think this is worse than Nixon.
Yeah.
I think they were offended that they were put in the same category as Donald Trump, to be honest. I think it's much worse.
Well, let me really ask the tough question or play devil's advocate here. Trump has
yeah, sure.
now fired the FBI director. He has a compliant Congress for now. The Justice Department is run solidly by his people. And the press and the court system are under constant attack from him and his supporters.
Yes.
Is it possible that he is in a position where he's above the law on this one?
Oh yeah, and this was supposed to be when he ran the campaign, it was based on the law, right? He was supposed to be the candidate
mm-hmm.
that was going to bring back the law. But yeah, you know, he definitely does think he's above the law, and anything that of course it's no surprise that any news that's covered that they don't like, they just deem as fake news and just dismiss it. I also want to point out that the head of the census also just resigned. That's huge ramifications. That's not really being covered a lot. So we've
mm-hmm.
got that to contend with right now. But I want to point out that there was a study done, a scientific study, where they were doing word association, and the three words that were most commonly associated with Donald Trump right now are idiot, incompetent, and liar. from a scientific study with word association and his picture. So that, you know, that kind of tells the story of where things are at. And the position, I am political director for the Fulton County Democratic Party. I want to say that we're using this at every advantage because, of course, the midterms, we've got municipal elections coming up. Right now we're showing a 19-point lead going into the midterm elections. And we're looking really good in Georgia. So, you know, we're going to be playing this all to our benefit. And right now things do, you know, the Republicans have control of everything. So this is their one shot to pony up and get all these changes done and see what they can do. But there really is no excuse. They're blundering everything with, to do with health care. They can't seem to get any momentum with that. So, you know, it's their game right now. They own it. And they try to pin everything that doesn't work on liberals, but they're running the show right now, so it doesn't make any sense.
Amen to that. And with that, I'm going to throw it back to David. David?
Yes, it's funny you mentioned fake news, and a question that I didn't prep before came to mind. Now, you'll be on Fox News, giving the Democratic perspective, speaking the truth, the power. And then, of course, CNN will have people like Jeffrey Lord on. Now, have you heard how any of the Republicans, when you're on there saying things they don't like to hear on their channel, Fox News, are you fake news on Fox News? And then, conversely, somebody like Jeffrey Lord, real news on the fake news network?
Yeah, no, I make very sure to never speak in hyperbole. I speak in straight facts, numbers, statistics. Things that are inarguable. So a lot of times they actually end up agreeing with what I'm saying on point. They've never called me fake news on the air. Now I get a lot of listeners that will take issue with what I'm saying, and because they've never heard anything like this on Fox. All they know is they have somebody on their, you know, they take it as an invasion into their home. I'm on their television, their conservative safe space, if you will. And you want to talk about snowflakes that are triggered? That's them, because they rarely get to hear the truth on Fox News. But when I'm sitting there giving them things that they rarely hear, it's to them, they think, the viewers think that I'm lying. But the actual pundits, the people that are on the panels with me, they've never called me fake news because they know the truth. Like, I'm well positioned with what I do because all I have to do is say the truth.
Yeah, well, thankfully we got you and the Catheter Cowboy telling the truth on Fox News. Well, let's go ahead, and I want to just kind of shift gears a little bit. And Tom Jensen, another friend of the show, came out with a poll, and it looked at both health care and the James Comey firing. And he found in his poll that the health care bill, resonated far better with voters, including independents and Republicans and Trump supporters, than did the James Comey firing. So kind of a two-part question. One, why do you think that might be? And two, what do we need to do to be careful not to worry so much about the James Comey situation that we forget about health care?
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you asked that. I just spoke about that this past week. They were bringing the point up about Comey, and I said, you know, I really wish that we could move past this because we have far more important things that affect everyday working Americans. This healthcare issue is a humongous problem. The proposed plan that they have for Trump care, and I use that term every chance I get because he takes issue and doesn't want his name associated with his own policy. So I use the term Trump care whenever I can on the news. I want to say that his proposed plan is only polling at 17% favorability. And they like to try and throw at me that Obamacare was so unpopular. Well, right now it's polling at 34% popularity. So while it's not ideal, it's still twice as good as what they've got. My own family members are covered by Obamacare. I'm worried about them not being covered because of pre-existing conditions whenever this policy changes. So, you know, we do have, I would like for us to move past the issue of Comey. Some of these things that are, I truly start to wonder if they're not just diversions to throw little speed bumps in the way so that we lose track of the bigger carrot. because this healthcare thing is huge. So, and I'm my biggest fear is that, you know, we're so concerned about all of this craziness. It's like reality TV, but it's our government, you know. So, that's my concern. But yeah, that's we've got to move on to healthcare, get back on track.
Well, and that's not to say the Comey thing's not important too. It's like maybe we need to worry about Comey and healthcare and how many scoops Donald Trump gets, even if it is petty, whether he brings stuff like that up.
Yeah.
One more question I have, and I'm gonna let Tim and Catherine have one more shot. You're in the Army Reserves, and so you have to take, I guess it's a weekend every month off to serve our country. And
that's
Sean
correct.
Spicer, the press secretary, is in the Naval Reserve, has to take off a weekend every month to serve the country as well. And I guess this weekend, it started at the end of the week, was obviously such a newsmaker that we really noticed it. And they had the deputy press secretary, Sandra Huckabee Sanders, come in. And then people started saying, well, you know, she did a good job defending him. And, of course, there's been rumors that Sean Spicer is already kind of – Donald Trump's not as happy with him as he once was. If he were to fire him very soon after he did his Army National Guard duty, replace him with the person that filled in for him while he was doing his Navy National Guard duty – sorry about getting the wrong branch of the military there.
No, you're good.
Would that be – a real possible violation, because it's my understanding you can't be your job can't be impacted because you have to miss some work to be in the National Guard. And then also, in addition to actual legally, how would it look appearance wise?
Well, you know, there are indeed legal ramifications. Your employer cannot terminate your employment because your reserve duty interfered with. I mean, an employer can take issue, like, say, for example, if I had a deadline at work and I had a reserve weekend coming up, my employer can say I needed to reschedule that weekend, but they can't legally say we're going to fire you because you're in the reserves. That is against the law. I do think that Spicer is on his way out. I think that the biggest sign of that I've seen was Donald Trump tweeting this week that perhaps they're going to do away with the press briefings and just put out written statements. And I'm sure, I have a feeling that he's just embarrassed.
Well, and not only that, he said he was going to do them.
Yes, he did.
That he was going to do the press briefings.
You were asking basically about the appearance. This is obviously an administration that does not care a whole lot about optics or being lawful. So, I mean, I don't think that's the first consideration. I think in a minute, if he perceives that Spicer is embarrassing him or in any way, shape, or form not loyal, he's out.
Yes. Well, let me go ahead and be fair to Tim and Catherine and pass it around one more time. Tim, questions, and then we'll finish up with Catherine. Tim?
Yes, sir. When you were on before, we talked briefly about the vice president, and I'd like to bring him back into this again because, we've seen Donald Trump, like with this firing of Comey, obviously forgot to, you know, mention it to any of his staff or why. So they're scrambling. They're going out. They're giving all these explanations. The vice president himself, like the good trooper that he is, out he went, made his statement. Then Donald Trump gives interviews in which he, you know, says something the opposite. So I've got to ask, is the vice president, along with most of the staff, out of the loop when it comes to anything Donald Trump decides?
Of course. Absolutely they're out of the loop. I mean, I don't think Donald Trump for a second considers how it's going to look to them professionally when he says something completely contradictory to something that they just said representing him. I mean, look at Kellyanne Conway is now upstairs and down the hallway as far removed away from him as possible. So she's also just so far out of the loop that you know, what is it, CNN now won't have her back on? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're all out of the loop. Donald Trump just thinks that he can run this just like he did The Apprentice, and that it's, like I said, it's reality television, and that's the way he's running this presidency. He thinks that he's a one-man show, and he still does not have a clue how government works, and he doesn't really think that he needs his staff other than to have bodies there to fill the slots. But I don't think he's briefing them. I think he's keeping them deprived of information and well out of the loop, as we've seen recently.
And back to this eliminating press conferences. The president chose to share that with someone on your network, Jeanine Pirro. He even stopped her in her tracks when he said this. Is he serious about this? And is it a good idea, as far as Donald Trump is concerned, to do away with them?
It's a terrible idea. So I really hope in some ways that he does it, because I think that's when people are going to start to actually see that this is fascism. And they're going to equate fascism with Donald Trump. That's what really needs to happen. That's what's going on here. He is the definition of fascist. I can only hope that he does something so stupid as to do away with the press briefings in lieu of written statements that no one can contradict to his face, you know?
But now he chose to make this pronouncement on a show that, let's face it, his base is going to be tuning in to. Was he talking to his base to get them on board with this?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. This whole thing has been pitched to his base. You know, the media, all as a whole, the media has now been deemed as fake news. Anything that's credible, anything that is all independent media is now fake news. It's just inconvenient to him. So if the independent media is inconvenient, he's deemed it as fake news. And I think he would love nothing more than to do away with these press conferences so that his supporters will look solely to him, and they will just believe whatever it is that he says by virtue of his Twitter. So, you know, that's the way he wants it, and that's what he's setting up.
Unreal. With that, I'm passing it to Catherine.
So, Robin, as the political director at the Fulton County Democrats, I'm sure you get a lot of people asking, so what do we do? What do we tell people who are frustrated? Do we just keep up with the faxes and emails and calls to our senators and our congressmen? I recently saw an idea of reaching out to voters in Trump, in places where Trump won. And so it's sort of like citizen to citizen saying, you know, can't you see this is horrible? But
yeah.
Honestly, are we going to keep rallying? I mean, are all these things, are they working? Do you think they're working? Do we just keep it up, or is there some other strategy that we should be considering? Or
yeah, sure. There's not an easy answer to this, but what I do want to say is that the easiest way to get involved, if you've never been involved in politics before, you probably have no clue how to get started. So the easiest way possible to get involved is at the county level. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, look up your local county's either Democratic Party or Democratic county office or Republican, and show up to their meetings. Google their website. Their meetings will be listed on the website. Show up to their meetings. If you show up a couple times, you're going to be a familiar face. You'll suddenly be rolled up and get involved. We're bursting at the seams right now with people attending our meetings. And this past week, we had a packed house. They were making calls to the 6th congressional district for the special election for John Ossoff. And the people that weren't making calls were writing postcards. And they were so enthused. Everybody was smiling. They had the best time. So, you know, people are feeling empowered. If there's one thing that this president is good for, it's uniting us, because now everyone's deeply, gravely concerned and they're getting involved. We've got more people now that have raised their hand that are interested in running for office because they know that a blue wave is headed our way in 2018. As I just said, we're polling at 19% more favorable right now than the Republican candidates in 2018. So, you know, like I said, show up at the county party level. The people that are, if you want to go to a rally, by all means, go to a rally, raise your voice, let it be heard. We need people in numbers at those events. And, you know, if you're someone that likes to stay at home on a keyboard, then by all means, post everything that you can, put the truth out there, because, you know, we're not hearing it sometimes from, of course, the people that watch Fox News very rarely get a chance to hear the truth. And any time that I'm on, of course, it's three against one, so they give me probably the least amount of airtime. They give you the least amount of airtime, but believe me, I try to make the most of it.
Well, thank you. That's
yes.
Really good advice.
Well, Rob,
I appreciate it. Go ahead, David.
Well, Robin, we thank you for being on the Kudzu Vine, and you keep fighting a good fight on the TV, and hopefully
y'all
you'll come back on the Kudzu Vine where you got a little more friendly folks on the air with you.
I know. It makes more airtime. Thank you, guys. I'm not used to this.
Thank you, sir. We'll be watching
you.
We'll
be watching.
Thanks a bunch. I appreciate all you do. Bye-bye.
Yes, thanks again. That was Robin Biro, Fulton County political director and frequent contributor, Democratic contributor on Fox News and Fox Business News. And I guess since we're talking about it, most importantly, he's an Army National Reservist, since we talked about Naval Reservist as well. But we'll hopefully get Robin on continuing throughout the months. Well, we've got a little more time to talk about some other topics. And one, since Robin was in charge of Fulton County, and Catherine, you live in Fulton County, and Tim and I have driven on Interstate 85 at times, let's talk about a topic that we were discussing really less than 2 months ago. The Interstate 85 had been burned, crumbled. It was going to be this major traffic dilemma. We thought it would go into the summer. And they finished in record time. I think it was under 6 weeks. They've opened up both sides of I-85. They did northbound a little like a day or two ahead of southbound. But they've got that put back together, which no matter how you feel about transportation, if somebody's been told to do a project and they can work that fast, kudos to them. Catherine, what are some of your thoughts and what are folks saying that live closer to Interstate 85?
Well, I think everybody's, you know, really relieved that it's, you know, repaired and that, you know, traffic will resume as previous. I think, you know, there's been some sort of mild questions about how long does it take for concrete to, you know, really become solid, and how did they do this so quickly? And I mean, I don't think it's like questioning the viability of it, just sort of wondering, like, how did they do it so fast? But I think there's a lot to be said for putting high dollar incentives on the people who did it. You know, they're working 24/7 and they just, you know, really focused on getting it done. I think it's quite something. And as you said, I think you said earlier before the when we were doing our pre-show chit chat, like, why it makes the football stadium builders look a little, not, you know,
slower,
not lazy,
or
but
incompetent,
slower or something.
Yeah.
Like they can't get that thing done in however long they've been working on it. I mean, obviously it's a completely different kind of project and much more complicated, but still, I mean, it still begs the question. But I think everyone, like the PI, I have some friends who have always taken MARTA, and they're like really relieved to get MARTA back. You know, they're like, oh, why are all these people on MARTA? I mean, I think we all want people to use MARTA as much as they can, but I think that if you're used to having a train that's, you know, full but not over full, and all of a sudden for 6 weeks you can't get a seat, I can see how people will be a little, those people will be relieved as well. So I think it's all good news.
Yeah, and it may be that. I was going to say, and maybe some people that rode MARTA, gave MARTA a try, will pick it up. Maybe some folks also that carpooled for the first time, you know, they might get a little more of that. But obviously we need an interstate to connect Charlotte to Atlanta, down through Columbus and different places. I mean, you know, roads are a necessary thing. And if you're going to have them, you don't want them burned and crumbled. You want them existing. Tim, what are your thoughts on this, how quickly this got done?
Well, yeah, you were right. It was about 6 weeks, and no one expected that to happen. I got to give kudos to the government agencies that were involved. And I know that we're a progressive show, and I'm sitting here bragging on some Republicans. Well, so be it. They did a good job on this thing. We're glad to see this vital link going again, and the big test will be in the morning, won't it, Catherine? Rush hour?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, and another key thing is it's vacation season is coming up, and, you know, places, Charlotte getting to, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, all those cities in North Carolina, then probably even Norfolk and Newport News, Hampton, all those areas, they're going to use 85 to get to Florida. And Florida to get to those places, I'm sure some Floridians go to Newport News and Raleigh and what have you. And so that's going to ease vacation concerns getting there. Because, of course, a little further up there, we were talking about you use 75. So, you know, it's good to see. And that, therefore, those folks that do want to criticize government, this is a government road, a government project, and it got done efficiently.
Right.
So
right.
This is one where you can't use the inefficiency argument. Well, let's talk about another topic.
Well, it wasn't government.
Oh, go ahead.
It wasn't government that built the road.
No,
the
but
contract.
They hired, they planned
right.
it. And you know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
a completely private toll road. Like some of those folks
right.
are, you believe, that's the only thing that could get built efficiently.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify
well,
that.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and talk about another topic that we've discussed before, and that would be the Alabama Senate race. I know myself, I'm very curious to see what a special Senate election looks like in this era. Now, obviously, the only way to know that is if there is a good Democratic candidate versus a good Republican candidate. We'll assume that given that they have the former Attorney General, the person that Robert Bentley chose to serve in that seat, Luther Strange, either it's going to be him or it's going to be somebody that defeated him. And now we have somebody on the Democratic side, Doug Jones, who was a prosecutor, prosecuted, unfortunately, not back in the 60s, but in the 90s, it took that long, the Birmingham church bombings. And so he's decided to jump into the race. There may be more Democratic candidates because this is going to be a primary then general election battle. But that's a substantive candidate that's looking at this race. Tim, how much do you think this will matter that now the Democrats have a real candidate that they can point to, not this fellow that runs every other time for something that apparently marijuana legalization is his number one issue?
Well, it is nice, at least, that we have a frontline Democrat actually running. Over on the other side, you've got the sitting senator, Luther Strange. He's going to be facing at least four opponents in the Republican primary. We will know, let's say, I believe the filing deadline is the 17th, so we will know then. Who all is running, but we know he's at least got four opponents. Among them, God help us, is Roy Moore. But there are some strong candidates on the Republican side. This is not going to be any 40-point blowout or something, I can tell you that. But still, I have faith, but this is really going to be a tall order. Even with as good a candidate as we could hope to run here, in Doug Jones, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, Catherine, your thoughts on this Alabama Senate race?
I have a question. Is this a jungle general, or is there a primary, a Democratic primary and a Republican primary?
This is going to be like the South Carolina special election was, where there will be a primary. I think it's in August, and then the general won't be till like December, which I think I read that, and I thought that was very strange, because why wouldn't you at least make it November with
primary.
The municipal election? Yeah, so
there'll
be a
partisan
primary.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I just couldn't figure out why the general, actual election, when it was the Democrat and the Republican and maybe the Libertarian, wouldn't be in November, when you would assume there'd be some type of municipal election
or maybe special referendums or what have you. David, you got to remember when Bentley was in office, he was going to hold the thing next year. And, you know, the law over there says to do it in a timely manner. So when the new governor came in, she moved it up to where it is now. So it's a lot better than it was.
I think it definitely was, and Kay Ivey deserves credit for that.
Right.
The federal elections require a longer time between primary and general elections.
And that may be it. There may be some reason that they had to extend it out. I mean, I'm all for efficiency and dollars. I know when you open up polling places for elections, it costs money. Now, of course, that's the price of democracy. But if you're holding the Selma and the Tuscaloosa and the Gadsden mayor's race, you know, in November anyway, then go ahead and hold the Senate primary is my thinking, if possible. Now, if there's some other Justice Department legal rule, I'll give them pass on that. Well, one more final topic in our next 3 minutes, and that's going to set up our what's 99% sure our guest next week. Matthew Dowd has it's come out this week, Red Racing Horses. I don't know if it's Jackson Dar that posted it, but they said that they've learned that Matthew Dowd is not going to run for U.S. Senate in Texas as an independent. That, of course, will affect the race. And, of course, hopefully next week we can ask Matthew Dowd about that. When Mr. Dowd is our guest, he's saying that he thinks the 21st will work, so I want to preview that. But then, Tim, I'm going to ask you, how much does that affect the election that there won't be an independent who is truly in the middle of the Democratic and the Republican parties?
Well, it probably gives the election to Cruz, to be honest. I mean, let's face it, no Democrat has won any statewide Texas office since 1994. No Democrat has won a Senate race over there since 1988. Even though Representative O'Rourke is a good candidate, and Joaquin Castro might get in, I'd say the chance of beating Cruz now, even though some recent polling from a poll I've never heard of showed the race close, I don't think it's doable.
I think the health care and the fallout of it will be important. Obviously, you got to be in position for these things to win it. A lot of times when people announce, you think they're crazy, and by election day, it seems realistic. Catherine, how much do you think not having Matthew Dowd as an independent affects the race?
Well, I agree with Tim. It gives a much better chance to Cruz for re-election. However, like you just said, and like we have seen, and hopefully we'll see good result in District 6 here, Congressional District 6, I think it's always good to have a qualified, well-funded, good candidate running whenever we can, because we never know what's going to happen, especially in these times. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with the president and the administration, and how whatever Cruz does has what impact that has on this election. So teeing up with a good candidate and have being prepared for that election is always a good thing, in my opinion.
Yes, and I do think that obviously it helps Ted Cruz. Of course, the assumption could be made that Texas is so far to the right that An independent candidate would have had a better chance than a Democrat, possibly. Although you hear Arizona, Georgia, Texas are the three big states that are going to move to the Democratic column, and people assume in that order. And Texas did move this past time more Democratic than a lot of other states. So it'll be interesting to watch, and that's something we can discuss next week. Thanks again to Robin Biro, and thanks to both of y'all for a great show.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Good evening.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and united America.